Okay, this is the fifth and final interview with Jim Stakely. We're here in the University Archives Conference Room. That's at the fourth floor of Steenbach Library. Today is August 17th, 2010, and the interviewer is Troy Reeves from the Oral History Program. I think we decided, with the recorder off, that we have a good spot. We have a pretty good idea where you are in your narrative, so if you want to just go from there, and we'll... probably get this done.
Okay, very good. I think that we're about the year, we had gotten at least up to the year 2000, and we had been talking about how these various committees that I was involved with had all kind of pushed gay studies, creation of or advancement of gay studies here on campus. And I think that the introduction to LGBT studies course was launched by Professor Joe Elder in the year 2000, and has been taught by him each semester since that time. We finally got approval of the certificate program, which is like a minor here at the UW-Madison, in LGBT studies in the year 2003 through the Academic Planning Council. And one of the great drafters who was extremely important in the creation of that was the now retired Professor Mariamne Whatley of the School of Education in the Department of Curriculum and Instruction, I believe. And I think she also worked over there as chair and possibly associate dean or something like that. So she's very skilled in administrative work and did a good job on drafting this proposal for the Academic Planning Council to get the certificate approved here. We were embarrassingly late in comparison, say, with the University of Wisconsin at Milwaukee, which had had its program in place already for several years at that time. And I remember we were cautioned by, the administrative people not to do anything that would create any unpleasant surprises. I think it was David Ward who wanted us to, be politic about this and not to ruffle the feathers too much of the conservative politicians in the state legislature. He would rather not wake up in the morning and read some negative account of, some politician at the other end of the street. I think I may have been interviewed by the Cap Times sometime around then. I didn't look back to get the interview, and maybe it was kind of a little intemperate, some of the language that I used in this interview in the Capital Times about gay studies, a little bit too militant or something like that, ill-considered, not sufficiently politic anyway. It was interesting that, like, we didn't get that through at the time that Donna Shalala was here, who was, everyone said that she was a lesbian, and she never had to this day come out or anything. But, like, we couldn't get it through. We couldn't get ROTC through under her, and we couldn't get a gay certificate program through. Odd that it had to be under her, under David Ward, Well, at that time, too, the university had gotten this bequest from the estate of George Mossy, who had already passed away, in 1999. And his will included a gift to fund LGBT research and teaching, and it was $250,000. And, of course, he also left the same sum, $250,000, to support LGBT studies at the University of Amsterdam, where they had had him as a visiting professor in gay studies for one semester, and he really loved that experience of being over there. So each of those schools got $250,000 for LGBT studies, and then, of course, he left money to individuals privately, and then the rest of the money to go to, the history department to promote, exchanges and faculty and student exchanges with the Hebrew University in Jerusalem, and to promote Jewish history studies here. I think at the time that he died, he didn't know how much it was, because, it had all been money that was tied up in East Germany. And it wasn't until the collapse of the communist state and the wall in 1989 that that property reverted to his family, and then it like slowly had to work through the legal channels. Turned out to be worth $12 million. At that time, the biggest bequest that the university had received from anybody. It's been surpassed in the meantime by the Chazens, I guess that's 20, and also the mortgages have given money repeatedly. And since the Grangers have become double dippers too, you know, I think all of those have surpassed it. But at the time, it was quite something. So, the you know, that it's interesting that our then dean, I believe it was Phil Certain, didn't like our proposal for creating a professorship in gay studies, but he was the person who then said that the money from the Mossy bequest could be used as a partial endowment to pay for the partial hiring of Professor Ann Enke. And Ann had this split appointment in the history department, where she teaches American history, in women's studies, where she does women's studies courses, and she was the first person ever hired at the UW-Madison to do LGBT. And the notion was it was one half history, 25% women's studies, and 25% LGBT. And that money, you know, the one quarter, quote unquote, of her salary, the notion was that would come out of this bequest from George Mossy. But the dean never took the money. The dean never took that quarter of $1 million and glommed it and put it into the pool for a payroll stream. It was just left there. And so that is still producing interest and can be used for other gay causes. For example, this coming year we're going to have a graduate student with a fellowship that's financed out of that money, out of that accumulated interest. And a young man who's coming in here from, I think, from the University of Iowa. Well, so it's nice that Ann Enke became our first professor in LGBT studies in the year 2001. And one person that I talked to at about that time was Assistant Dean Bill Miller. I guess it's William Miller, and maybe he had a middle initial that would be important, since William Miller is sort of a common name, but for the life of me, I'm not sure. I'm thinking it's V, but I'm not sure. But there probably weren't too many Dean William Millers at that time. Anyway, he was in the College of Letters and Science, one of the academic deans with an office in Bascom Hall. And I went over and talked to him quite a bit about, for example, study abroad, because he had actually been the director of the study abroad program in France many years earlier when he was still more professorial and less dean-like. And Dean Bill Miller told me that he was extremely pissed off at the university and considering bringing a lawsuit against them about gay discrimination. I believe in the upshot he did not bring a lawsuit against them. But what rankled him was the fact that his partner had died of AIDS, and he was kind of a psychological mess from, you know, having treated him or attended him while he was sick, and then burying him, and also then getting worried about his own, you know, HIV positive status and everything. And so the feeling that he should like get some time off, or, you know, they didn't want to give him time off, and he felt that the whole situation that he was in was not, you know, respected by the university and by his colleagues, and he was really mad as a hornet. Bill was one of these cases. I mean, I don't know the details of his biography, but another one of these people who's in this category of having first married and actually had adult children, beautiful son, beautiful daughter, and you know, then divorced from his wife and came out at maybe age 50 or something like that, and swung into action here in Madison, going down to the bar with this kind of leather outfit from head to foot and everything, and quickly found this boyfriend whom he hitched up with. And then, like, within a year, that boyfriend was dead of AIDS. So that's a strange way to come out at age 50, you know what I mean, and to have this kind of all this visited upon you. But Bill Miller, I raise all this, you know, to memorialize Bill Miller, but also because he made me mad. He's the one who told me, he said, years ago, I think he met maybe 15 years earlier or so. This is like, say, let's say it's in the 70s. I'm speculating, mid-70s, let's say. He had been working in Bascom Hall. He had been told, we have too many papers here, the archives, you know, it's bursting. We have too much stuff, too much paper. This needs to be thinned out. This needs to be called out. Archival work. You do it, Bill. And so he goes down and spends the summer rummaging around in these papers in the file cabinets, the administrative papers in Bascom Hall, the center of administration, all these old personnel files. And he says, I came upon these personnel files of faculty members who had been disciplined and suspended and terminated because they were homosexuals or homosexual things they'd done. And he says, and so those are among the files that I chose to be destroyed. Because I felt it would be so awful if their past caught up with these people. And that maybe they'd suffered enough on account of being gay, you know, and that maybe these paper records could come back to haunt them a second time. So I was doing these people a great favor by destroying their personnel records. And my heart just sank when I heard that. You know what I mean? Just sank. Well, I didn't ask him the key questions, how many, you know, from what years, or I don't know, seemed kind of vague anyway. But I really, you know, it's a shame that the history of gay people on this campus cannot be adequately reconstructed because, you know, those records have been intentionally destroyed by a gay man who thought he was doing a good thing. Isn't that weird? That's so strange. Well, I think I'm more or less done with what I wanted to say. I guess that's about enough. And you know, there's this stuff here, these general questions in the oral history interview, and then the specific ones for the gay, for the LGBT questions. And I could say a sentence about each, just a sentence. Growing up, I've said plenty about that. Coming out, I've said plenty about that. Social aspects, I think I've said more than enough. Relationships, activism, friendships, community. In your mind, has there been a gay or lesbian or LGBT community in Madison? If so, what are the key aspects of that community? Has it changed over time? Yes, there really is, you know. And there's long been a kind of a joke that, like, the lesbian community is so much stronger than the gay community here in town. Although I imagine the lesbians would say, no, it's exactly the opposite. The men have their, you know, their act together. But especially at the time when I was, like, you know, just beginning here, and Biddy Martin was a graduate student, there was so much women's music. That was a whole movement, you know. And there were events that took place here in town that were women's concerts, women's music, and there was even a little discussion that men could not attend those events. I was happy not to attend them, you know, and kind of create women's space. Present, future, is there an LGBT issue that you have seen in the most change in your lifetime? One or more, where you see the least changes? Would you be willing to guess on what might change over the next decade or so? Well, you know, I think the big change has come in this whole thing around marriage. That's huge. And, you know, family and custody of children and everything. Also, very influential during my years here at the UW-Madison for a time was the AIDS issue. That was really big. And, you know, continues in a way, despite the medical advances, and has also made the whole discussion of gayness, really brought it to the fore, the kind of public discussion. And the thing where I've seen the least changes, I've been involved a little bit with this Gay Straight Alliance for Safe Schools, GSAFE. And you know, that's what's really tough still is coming out for youngsters. I mean, it's maybe easier now than it was, you know, when I was in school. But man, it is still very challenging because those little teenage kids are such little conformists, you know, they're such little heterosexual dictatorship people in a way. It's really hard to break through that and when you're at the high school level. And I think there's still a lot of, you know, violence visited upon young people and a lot of psychological trauma often about coming out. So what might change over the next decade and what might not change? I really think that issue of, you know, marriage will move forward in interesting ways. Military, of course, all seems to be taking care of itself in a way. And the teenage thing, the youngsters, the coming out is going to continue to be a problem. And I also think that gay studies is shifting in an interesting way. I mean, when I was involved in gay studies, it was always about like, or, you know, especially because I was dealing with the case of Germany and the German history, like you had this kind of gay Holocaust or gays in the concentration camps anyway. And in some ways, the story was about a kind of a liberation movement in Germany, early Germany as a pioneer. A gay liberation movement, but that's followed by this horrible repression in the Nazi period. And so I've been interested in this kind of dynamic of emancipation and repression that can go on, backlash that can happen. And so what I find now is that there was a time when people were extremely receptive to that kind of information, knowledge. People wanted to know that a lot, especially when people were more active because of perhaps Vietnam or civil rights issue or whatever. And what's happening now is, it seems to me, like I already noticed it when I was teaching my gay studies course, team teaching with those other guys, that like the youngsters are all interested in issues like gay actors on TV, you know, or gay characters on TV shows or movies, or gay performance, or gays in the media. And there's, which I consider, I mean, on the one hand, it's an interesting topic of conversation, but to me, it seems to lack that kind of life and death seriousness of gays in concentration camps, you know what I mean? People dying for being gay. And this is more about, you know, it's kind of like the Disneyfication or the Hollywoodification or the kind of, I don't know, virtual world. I consider it kind of frothy and not so serious, although I think good cultural studies can be done dealing with issues of representation in the media and so on and so forth. But I'm afraid that it seems to me that like gay studies is kind of shifting in this direction of like less this emancipation, repression dynamic, you know, that kind of thing, and more kind of this representations and images and kind of secondary stuff to my way of thinking. Mm-hmm. I don't like it, you know. But on the other hand, you know, you could say that other thing you has been beaten to a, you know, no point in beating a dead horse. Everybody knows about it. It's more of an established history now. I don't know. Okay. Anything else? Significant faculty, of course. The narrator's plans, teaching style. Likes, dislikes of teaching, how have undergraduates changed? Any undergraduates leave a lasting impression on you? I think that like in the years that I've been here at the UW-Madison, the undergraduates have improved. Despite this frothiness that I just criticized a minute ago, and despite the, you know, computerization and everything, I do believe that the university has, for a complex set of reasons, automatically become more selective. That, you know, the cut of high school students that we take has shrunk from the top 20% to maybe the top 10% or something like that. Or I don't know, the admissions office would know exactly what it is and how that has shifted over the years. But it seems to me that the students have gotten better, the undergraduate students. Unfortunately, it seems to me that the graduate students have gotten worse during this time. And it's partly because, I don't know, when I started here, a lot of humanities fields, German included, had a kind of a political edge to them. Well, you know, that's the Marxist political thing. And we had our Marxist reading group and study group, which Biddy Martin was a member of too, very excellent, brainy member of. And that's changed so much. I remember when we finally broke down, had the German Department Bowling League, and I thought, oh my God, what have we sunk to? And then we had the German Department Bible Study group, and I thought, holy crap, you know, this is the opposite of what we need. And now what we mostly got is like, I don't know, hanging out or something. Like, so I feel like the quality of the graduate students has deteriorated. The German department, when I first arrived here, within the first 5 years, there were these graduate students who are now the chancellor here, Biddy Martin, the chancellor at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, Bob Holub. It was just a bunch of high-powered people who have gone on to really high positions, and they had gone into German precisely because it had that kind of Marxist critical edge to it in a way. And that's no longer of interest to the people who are in the graduate school now. I would also like to point out that this graduate school, German department, the department, was ranked number one nationally in the year, I believe the year that came out was approximately, let's say, 1988 or something like that, after I'd been here for about one decade. And now we've sunk to like something like number 7 or number 5 or something. That's bad. So I think that like the German department has kind of gone to pot in a way. I don't like the way that it's structured now. I think the undergraduates are better, and the graduate students are not as good, and the overall program of the German department is not as good. Research funding, role of war, federal agency. I'm pissed off at the University of Wisconsin for not having enough research support. This school is stingy in comparison with other schools. It's very stingy. And they brag on about how there's this Wharf money from vitamin D, how interesting, and warfarin and whatnot. It ought to be 10 times as much, you know? And it's really hard. It's really competitive getting that research money here. And I talked to colleagues at other schools. There's much more research money rolling around at those other schools. Another thing that pisses me off about the University of Wisconsin, I was willing to take a job here. I was desperate for a job. They don't do enough sabbaticals. And you know, at other schools, it's a given that every seventh semester you're off, or if you prefer, every seventh year you're off for a year. That's not the case here. I've been teaching here for 33 years and I have had 2 sabbaticals. Well, if I'd been at any other school, I would have had like 5. You see what I mean? 5 years, I've had 2 semesters. So there's not enough funding for sabbaticals and there's not enough funding for research, at least in the humanities, that's for sure. And so, and also, as we all know, the pay is extremely low, lowest of the Big Ten schools, or the second lowest. So altogether, you know, Wisconsin is a nice state and everything, but it doesn't have enough money. It's kind of poor. Kind of poor. You can make more money anywhere else, I'll tell you. Think about it. I never applied anywhere else. That's about it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. My final question, and I didn't tell you this was coming, but it shouldn't be too difficult. For some reason, this is the question I've glommed on to ask folks, is the Thomas Jefferson tombstone question, which is, Thomas Jefferson had 3 things put on his tombstone, and none of them had to do with national stuff. But basically the point is, heaven forbid you were to pass away, and I was the last person to hear what you wanted on your tombstone. If you could put 3 things on your tombstone, what would they be?
That's interesting because, you know, George Mossy, you know, did a tombstone thing like that. And so that made me think about that issue already in a certain kind of way, although I haven't really narrowed it down. But the point is that George Mossy always stood in a kind of a rivalry with Professor Harvey Goldberg. And those two professors in the history department both had huge followings, big lecture classes, 500, and Harvey even 1,000, especially during the Vietnam era, because he was talking about revolutionary topics and, you know, he was like holding forth. And I didn't say enough about Harvey as a gay man and everything. I should have said more. But like, Harvey died relatively young. He was always extremely unhealthy looking, you know, pale and wan and drawn and kind of sickly. And so his tombstone is right out there in the Speedway Cemetery, in the Jewish section of the cemetery. And George Mossy walked his dog. He lives very close to there, and walked his dog in the cemetery all the time, Chelsea. And so there he always saw Harvey's, his rival's tombstone, Harvey Goldberg with his dates, and thought about what he would do. And so Harvey has on his tombstone, Harvey Goldberg dates, and it says, teacher, historian, political activist. And George thought about it, because he knew that his tombstone would be very close to Harvey's, you know, and that the two would always be compared. And so it just says, George L. Mossy, dates, historian. Simplify, you know what I mean? And so, you know, if I have to have three, I guess I would say teacher, amateur historian, because I'm not in the history department, I'm in the German department, and gay activist, you know, kind of a thing. But I'll have to think about it. Yeah, I'll have to think about it.
Yep. Well, let's hope you live a long time to think about it for several years at least.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Jim, thank you very much. I appreciate it. This ends the oral history with Jim Stakely. Okay.